You're listening to the FQXI podcast. Thank you for listening to the Foundational Questions Institute podcast. We'd also like to extend our gratitude once more to Carlo Rovelli and Colin Stewart, Peter Byrne and Ken Wharton for taking part in this edition.
And as always, you can reach us by email at podcast@fqxi.org or on Twitter at FQXI. And that's all we have time for today. And wait, what's going on? Haven't we just started the podcast? Why are we saying goodbye already? It's like the future is happening before the past. It's almost retro-causal.
Indeed, Brendan. That's because our first guest, or last guest, is physicist and FQXI member Ken Wharton of San Jose State University, who argues that reality is retrocausal at a fundamental level. In some sense, as he will elaborate, things that happen in the future do influence the past, because the universe can be thought of as a four-dimensional jigsaw in which the past and future exist all at once. I met up with Wharton at FQXI's 5th International Meeting back in Banff, Alberta, in August. We were chatting in a lounge, which is why, at points, you might hear some music playing in the background, along with some chatter. I began by asking Wharton to explain why physicists should take notice of such a seemingly wild idea in which time beats back and forth. Here we are at FQXI's 5th International Meeting in Banff, Alberta, and I'm sitting here with Ken Wharton of San Jose State University to ask him about something called retrocausality, which, as far as I can tell, is as exciting as it sounds. It's something about things that happen in the future affecting things in the past. I'm sure you'll untangle the subtleties of that as we talk. But first of all, it sounds insane. It sounds science fiction. It sounds like the kind of things we want to be true but maybe aren't. Why are serious physicists thinking about this? What kind of problems are there in physics that you need to kind of invoke retrocausality to address?
The problems in physics are in quantum physics, and there's something weird and counterintuitive going on in quantum physics. And the question is, which of our intuitions is wrong? And it pretty much comes down to either we're wrong that there's an underlying reality, we're wrong, perhaps, or perhaps we're wrong that things exist somewhere and some when. We're wrong about locality. But it's also possible we're wrong about causality. Maybe that is the intuition that's wrong. And the bit of evidence pointing in that direction is that as we've drilled down to smaller and smaller levels, we've discovered the laws of physics don't match our conception of time. They're time symmetric in a way that we wouldn't have expected until we discovered how everything works.
Okay, so I can't let you get away with saying that we might be wrong about whether there's a reality or whether there's causality and all of this kind of stuff without saying, give me an example of something that makes me call something that I hold dear through common sense and, you know, everyday experience into question.
The best example is quantum entanglement, but it's complicated, so I'm going to do a simpler example, which maybe isn't quite as strong, which is called the double slit experiment. And the double slit experiment, you send seemingly a single particle through a pair of slits. And if you look to see which slit it goes through, it always goes through one slit. If you look what happens after the slits, much after the slits, it looks like it went through both slits. It builds up this interference pattern. So this is a case where you're making a choice. You're making an intervention in the world. How are you going to measure this particle? Are you going to measure the first measurement? Did it go through one slit or the other? Or are you going to measure the second measurement? Did it build up this interference pattern? And whichever way you choose, you're always right. When you look, did it go through one slit? The answer is yes, it always went through one slit. When you look, did it go through two slits? The answer is yes, it always went through two slits. And so many people have noted it is as if the particle knows how you're going to measure it. It knows what's going to happen to it. And a lot of people don't like to take the next step. It's as if that's happening. The next step is to say, maybe it is really happening.
So in this picture of retrocausality then, let's get to the bottom of exactly what that means. Are you saying, you know, you've given this double slit example, are you saying that the future is already written and so somehow the particles, the light, the photons, whatever in this experiment have access to knowing what's in the future because it's already happened? Or has the future not yet happened, but they're somehow clairvoyant? You know, what exactly does retrocausality mean?
Well, there are two questions there we got to untangle. First, let's talk about the status of the future. And you're absolutely right saying it hasn't happened yet. But in physics, most physicists who have looked at it conclude that the future is just as real as the past. You don't assign a different reality level to what's going to happen tomorrow. And one thing will happen tomorrow, I promise you, from what happened yesterday. They're just as real. Now, that is not the same as saying it's already written, because what you mean by that is probably, is it fated to occur regardless of what I do? And that's clearly not true. You can prove to yourself, you can make interventions in the world. I choose to intervene in the world a certain way, and I discover the world is correlated with my choice of intervention. And that's what we call causality. No matter how I choose to lift this napkin, when I make the choice to lift it, I discover it's lifted. And that is what we typically call causality. The example I just gave you is really the same thing. I'm choosing how to intervene in the world. I'm choosing how am I going to measure this particle. And I discover, however I choose, it's always correlated with what has just happened. And so if you go by that definition of causality, and you believe that you're uncovering a real property of this particle, did it go through one slit or two slits, almost by definition, your future choice is causing that past reality.
Okay, let me think about that for a moment. So it's your future choice that is affecting what the particle does, or is it the particle's future that's affecting your choice?
Excellent question. That comes down to how you define causality. Way back when, the philosopher Hume decided the way to tell which is the cause and which is the effect is whichever one happened first is the cause, and whichever one happens second is the effect, which is a perfectly good definition, unless you want to consider retrocausality, in which case you discover you're just ruling it out. You're not even allowing yourself to consider it. This interventionist account of causation, where an intervention is correlated with an effect, is a way that allows you to look at causation in both directions. So if you take the Humean perspective that the past always causes the future, you would conclude, I had no free will. The fact of the matter, whether the particle went through one slit or two slits, has determined my choice. And that's a very depressing point of view, I think. A much nicer point of view is that I have free choice coming from outside the system, in whatever sense that choice is free. And my choice is the cause, and it's the past event that's the effect.
Okay, so you've sort of presented this kind of time-twisting notion to explain what's happening in quantum experiments, but then you sort of said that a lot of physicists don't want to take that step and think about things in that manner. So what other options do they have that allow them to kind of reject this, and why are they wrong?
We'll find out who's wrong at some point. Way back when Newton first taught us how to do physics, and he called it the system of the world, he taught us to use initial states and laws and evolve them to discover what would happen. And a lot of physicists see this as how the universe really works. The universe takes an initial state, it solves some equations, and spits out the future. And that's one way to look at it. But we have other tools in physics that don't follow that prescription. And the ones I have in mind are these things called action principles, where instead of starting at the beginning and sort of running the universe forward like a big computer program, you instead start with partial information at the beginning, partial information at the end, and solve the whole universe all at once like an interlocking four-dimensional jigsaw puzzle. And physicists use this technique. It's called these Lagrangian techniques in all branches of physics. But most of them don't take it literally as how our universe might really work.
Okay, all right. So you've kind of presented this, and you're saying actually physicists are doing it. They're using the ideas perhaps implicitly without really thinking about what they're doing or appreciating or acknowledging what they're doing. But is there any way that we can test whether this is something that's literally happening or whether it is just this kind of mathematical trick that people are using? Is there any way to kind of solve this debate?
The problem with the test is you can't interpret the result of the test without some assumptions. Depending on what assumptions you make, you can test it. If you assume that everything in the universe lives in space and time, and you assume there's some reality So you don't give up reality, you don't give up locality, and you say, I want to explain these entanglement experiments. The only realistic local interpretation of these entanglement experiments proves retrocausality. But most physicists say, well, let's make a different set of assumptions. Let's assume there's no retrocausality, and then the very same experiments prove non-locality. So basically what the experiments tell us is that if you're a realist about things, either nature is non-local or nature is sometimes retrocausal. But which one the experiments are telling us, we don't yet know how to tell.
Okay, so in some sense, it's a way of personal choice, you know, and what to believe about what you're seeing. You know that you have to give up something. You know that there's some weirdness happening, but it's kind of down to your personal taste, what you want to give up. But then let me ask you, and I can see that you're sort of itching to answer and to disagree with me here. Given the way that I've stated that, you can kind of argue with that now. Why does it even matter what you think, I suppose, is the question. What good does it do me if I decide to say, okay, well, retrocausality is the right thing to think? Can it take me forward? Can it help me solve other problems? Or is it just, you know, I can just think what I like, basically?
I'll answer that second question first. I think it's enormously important for the simple fact that we have these two branches of physics that don't talk to each other. We have general relativity, this beautiful theory of space and time that has withstood experimental tests for 100 years. We have particle physics and quantum field theory, another pillar of physics that also has withstood seemingly every experimental test. But these two theories don't talk to each other. So the goal in physics is to unify these two stories, somehow get one story that both of these fit into. And which way you answer this question basically determines how to go about that. If you think that the universe really is non-local, then general relativity is wrong, quantum mechanics is right, and we have to quantize gravity. But if you think the world is really retrocausal and general relativity is right in the sense that things really do exist somewhere and some when, then instead of quantizing gravity, you want to start with gravity and space-time and space-time the quanta. You want to take quantum phenomena and explain them back in a space-time framework. And so that is a crucial first decision point. And unless you explore both paths, you're possibly missing out on the right answer.
Okay, that's a good answer. So we just had a panel earlier talking about what exists. And, you know, one of the questions that came up was whether time exists. And I know that you had some things to say about that. But I guess in this retrocausal picture, I'm trying to work out, are you saying that time doesn't exist at a fundamental level? And that's why, you know, things can kind of move backwards and forwards and influence things in all sorts of directions. Or are you saying that time is so fundamental, it kind of has superpowers and, you know, it can work backwards and forwards?
Well, we should know not to just talk about time. We should know to talk about space-time. That's not always done. But if you take general relativity at face value, yes, space-time is kind of the manifold that everything lives on. That's reality. In my retrocausal perspective, space-time is absolutely real. We don't want to think about things sloshing back and forth in space-time, because what that does is it puts a fifth time dimension in, right? You're imagining things changing on a spatial axis that's supposed to represent time, and you have two times and it gets very messy. You want to kind of freeze it all like a big giant four-dimensional jigsaw puzzle. But suppose time exists now and space exists and all these things exist in space and time. In general relativity, that's all you need. Everything there exists. Everything that's not there doesn't exist. If you start from the premise that there's a wave function that's real, then you would be pushed away from that. You would say space and time have to be emergent. But the alternate perspective with retrocausality is that space and time can indeed be fundamental, and it's these apparent quantum phenomena that are emergent.
Well, now let me ask you the kind of science fiction question now, because you've kind of opened this door to retrocausality and causes in the future affecting the past or affecting now, or some sort of weird time twisty thing that I can't even articulate. But, you know, this is all at the kind of quantum particle level. But does this open the door to time travel? Does this open the door to, I don't know, seeing into the future or knowing what happens? You know, what can this allow on the level of our experience?
In principle, it does seem that retrocausality could allow signaling into the past, i.e., same thing as learning about the future, or i.e. the same thing as time travel. But you can ask yourself, well, is there any way to have retrocausality without allowing signaling to the past, without allowing paradox? And the only way to do it would be if, for some reason, what you were causing in the past was hidden, something that you couldn't see. And then you say, wait, isn't that amazing? Quantum mechanics tells us that there are things that we can't always measure. There are these uncertainty principles that says you can't always find out exactly what's going on in the classical description. And so really, quantum mechanics saves you from paradox, because the hidden things that you're causing in the past are hidden. You don't know about them until it's too late to make a paradox.
Wow. Okay. I think you've answered all of my questions there. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
I would like to say that when physicists have to make a choice and say which of our intuitions is wrong, we shouldn't go with our gut. When we just go with our gut and say, well, which intuition do I like better? All you're really asking is not which intuition is more likely true. You're asking which intuition is more strongly built into my brain, which intuition is more human. And that's not what we want to get at. We want an objective account of which of our intuitions are right. And so let's look at the evidence. Let's be good scientists. You say, I have intuitions about time. How well do they match up with what we actually know about time? And the answer is not really well. We don't expect time symmetry. We don't expect space and time to all be connected. We don't expect simultaneity to be subjective, and yet they are. So we know our intuitions about time are flawed to some extent. You can also ask the same questions about our intuitions about locality. Are they flawed? Well, back in the day, Newton introduced action at a distance to explain gravity, but he didn't really like it. But he did it anyway, and it took 300 years for Einstein to fix that. And now discover, wait, actually, there is an intermediary between gravitational bodies. And so really, we don't have as much reason, empirical physics reason, to doubt locality. And we do have a reasonable amount of reason to doubt our instincts about causality. And that is one of the things that makes me interested in pursuing this option.
That was Ken Wharton chatting with Zia. On the podcast page, fqxi.org/community/podcast, we have links to an essay on retrocausality that Wharton wrote for Nautilus, as well as some other time-twisting stories.